is good, everybody. Welcome to another Gold Standard podcast, the final Gold Standard podcast before training camp begins. I'm Rob Stats Guerrera. That is Michelle Madu. We are so excited, Michelle. I know I am. Bring it on, baby. Training camp starts tomorrow.
Woo! No, you're definitely way more excited than me, for sure. Because you take it a lot more seriously than I do, especially when it comes to the young guys.
I am just glad that starting tomorrow, I could hear my phone make a noise and it might be 49ers news. I don't know it might be bad, unfortunately.
Exactly. But yeah, we don't want too many alerts popping up about the 49ers training camp because normally those are injuries.
Yes, but I have alerts for like anybody that says anything about the 49ers. So luckily it's not just like the national things, because I agree those are sadly mostly terrible reports. But I'm just so glad that stuff could finally be happening. We had this whole offseason that just it's built up and previews and projections and who said this about that and it's happening. It's starting. It's happening. I cannot wait. I am so freaking excited. I did on the 49ers in five, what I do during this 40 days of death is I go back and I look at one player a day, every single day, Brock Purdy, and we go through the whole roster. Today was Jacob Cowing. So I did a complete breakdown of every Jacob Cowing play in 2025. I'm going to do it real quick right now. Okay, now that that's over with, he has so much on the line. I was trying to think about it from his perspective today. You train your whole life. You go to college. You ball out in college football. You get drafted. You're practicing your ass off. You're learning the playbook. You're blocking. You're doing everything. He barely plays in 2024. His whole season gets wiped out. And now Jacob Cowing is fighting for his football life, for his career in training camp, because there's probably only one wide receiver spot open on this roster, and he's got to fight with Jordan Watkins and other guys for it. He's like on a tightrope here for his football life.
But that's most fourth round picks, right? Like he was a fourth round pick. That happens to almost everyone that's drafted in the fourth round. You're fighting for your life year after year after year to make these rosters, to be on the field. And you've always had this thing for Jacob Cowing. You just always thought if he could just be out there, he'd be like this amazing player. I don't think we're going to see much more of Jacob Cowing this year than we have. I think it's going to be a struggle for him to make the roster. And if he does, like, who's he going to play over?
Yeah, it's going to be a struggle for him for sure. Kyle Shanahan said at OTAs last year, nobody had a bigger improvement and nobody came in more prepared than Jacob Cowing. And then the first day of training camp, he pulls his hamstring running routes on air. And then he injures it multiple times trying to come back. I can't even imagine what it's got to be like to be him right now. I didn't mean to derail us, but as I was doing the 49ers in five today, I started thinking about all this stuff. It's like, damn, that has got to be frustrating.
Yeah. And the thing is, with guys that you do draft in the fourth round, especially wide receivers, your goal, I think most teams' goals is like, okay, we need some backup. We need some depth at wide receiver, right? And that's what these guys were supposed to be in Watkins and Cowings. And if you get Cowing, and if you get more than that out of them, then that's just the cherry on top, right? Like, oh, well, we found a steal in the fourth round, because that's what that is. If you find a good player that can actually start for you or be heavily involved in the fourth round, that's a steal. So they needed them for depth. Unfortunately, didn't have either of those guys for depth because they can't stay healthy, especially Cowing. But now they've added more depth. And I think at this point, Jacob Cowing, I'm not sure we're ever going to actually get to see him on the field for the 49ers.
Can you just, number one, be better than Kendrick Bourne? And like, and also, unlike Bourne, Cowing is at least fast. So he at least, Kendrick Bourne is not scaring anybody in any way as a player, right? At least with Jacob Cowing, he's fast. That might help something. Something to scare a defense. There was
Why they draft a Stripling, though?
Yes. You can have more than one guy that can do it. That's fine. And with the way the 49ers guys have been getting injured, you're going to need more than one guy that could do it. That is the bar for Jacob Cowing. I don't want to see the 49ers have to roll out Malik Turner and Kendrick Bourne this year. Like the bottom of the roster, the bar needs to be higher for them.
Well, yes, I mean, instantly, but hopefully it's Ricky Pearsall and Mike Evans and Christian Kirk and Stripling. Those are the guys that we hope to stay healthy and be out there on the field. Like, it's not a crazy thing to ask that 1 year, wide receivers, you don't need to keep looking for the guys that are deeper down the depth chart. Like, a lot of teams have their starting wide receivers stay healthy all year long. Can that just be the 49ers for once?
I would certainly love that, but be careful. You're going to anger the football gods, Michelle. Don't get greedy. I'm all right.
You're selling Evans stay healthy all year long, and I think this offense would be top three in the league if that's the case.
Captain T. Morgan says, hello, Team Ranch on Pizza. Captain, you disappoint me.
And I'm so hungry right now that is like, oh, man, I could die for pizza with ranch right now.
Oh, my. If you have to, I can't believe that Levin and I were in such lockstep on Wednesday. If you have to dip your pizza in anything, you're not eating good enough pizza.
Yeah, that's what people say. That doesn't make any sense. The pizza's great on its own. It's way better with ranch. Like, you have to realize I've had amazing pizza growing up. I also grew up north in New York. Like, I've had amazing pizza. It's not just you, Stats.
I think you think you've had amazing pizza.
Okay.
Hidden Valley doesn't go with pizza.
Okay? Oh, I don't have Hidden Valley. That's nasty.
You don't like Hidden Valley. What's your ranch then?
Well, actually, it's not any better. Well, I love restaurant ranch, right? Like Wingstop Ranch, number one in the world. Chili's has really good ranch too. But I get Ken's Light Ranch dressing for home.
Ken's Light Ranch dressing for home.
The Hidden Valley's nasty. That's not even ranch.
You don't like Hidden Valley? I think it's fine. I just don't put it on pizza. Give me like a vegetable tray. I'm all about it. Give me the ranch, 100%. Just not on pizza. All right. I have derailed us long enough. I apologize, everybody. You're getting cooked in the comments for your choice of Ken. There goes our Ken sponsorship. People may not have heard Matt Maiocco interviewed Mike McDonald, the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks at the American Century Golf Championship. I, of course, was fascinated to hear this because I always want to hear what opponents say about the 49ers, particularly in the division, particularly one that just stomped the 49ers in the playoffs. And to Maiocco's credit, I like the way he phrased it to Mike McDonald. He's essentially like, hey, how have you been able to have Kyle Shanahan's number? Take a listen to McDonald's response.
I wouldn't say that we have the 49ers number or we don't have their night. It's just like, it's just those games played out that way. And then as the game starts to unfold, you start to realize the things that you need to be able to do to go win the game. And our guys did that, you know, so they deserve a lot of credit to, you know, making it come to life.
I thought that was interesting. And I went back and looked, and he's kind of right. So McDonald goes against Shanahan in 2023. We know how that went, right? The foreigner said that the game that took away Brock Purdy's MVP, 49ers did put up 429 yards in that game. They just kept turning the football over. Next game, Kyle Shanahan wins, puts up 36 points, drops 483 yards on Mike McDonald. The game after that, Mike McDonald wins, right? That's the Geno Smith running it into the end zone with like 13 seconds left. That was a 20-17 game. Game after that, Week one last year, Kyle Shanahan wins 17-13. Game after that, Mike McDonald wins again at the end of the season, week 18, obviously the 13-3 game where the Niners only put up 173 total yards. And then, of course, the playoff game where they absolutely billy clubbed the Niners. But for the most part, this has been a back and forth matchup.
Yeah, but even the week one, like you said, what was it, 17-13 or 17-1?
17-13. Now, Jake Moody missed a 27-yard field goal and had a 36-yard field goal blocked.
Well, because, yeah, I'm so happy he's gone. But that's still controlling the 49ers offense, right? Like, we do not expect them to win games with just 17 points scored. So they still controlled the 49ers offense. I do think Mike McDonald has totally figured out this Kyle Shanahan offense and has kept it under control, and Brock Purdy struggles against his defense. Now, most teams do, though, right? Like the Seahawks last year were one of the best teams in the league, if not the scariest team to go up against. I think he's an amazing play caller. I think he was just being very like corporate there, where he's just trying to like poker face, I don't know, or just like play nice, because he knows he owns Kyle Shanahan right now.
Here's a little more from Mike McDonald.
What's cool about our division is like there's these back and forth, so there's evolutions of like how we play each other every game. And so you have such a thorough understanding of what they do, how they do it, what they're attacking. You know, they have an answer. Now we have an answer. You go back and forth. And and it happens within games and within drives, and you have to be able to adapt and evolve, and the teams in our division do that.
I think if, like, when I go back and think about some of their matchups, it's making me wonder now if McDonald has been better in adjusting in game, because even like when I go back to the week one game, the Niners won, they get the ball first. They go, I think it was 95 yards right down the field and put up a touchdown on the first possession.
George Kittle, and then, baby.
Yeah. And then of course, obviously Kittle gets hurt. Juwan Jennings gets hurt, whatever. But the point is, the rest of that game, the 49ers did not move the ball as successfully as they did on that first drive. Even in the Ravens game, on the Christmas game, the Niners are putting up chunk plays going down the field. First drive of the game, Brock Purdy's like, yeah, I'm hitting it. And then Brock forces the ball and throws his first of four interceptions on the day. I almost wonder if McDonald's real genius is that in the game, he's like, all right, here's my plan, but San Francisco is doing X, Y, and Z, so now I'm going to do P, Q, and L, and we're going to have success and kind of adapt to what they're doing on the fly.
And I think it's not completely fair to look at last year with what 49ers could do against that defense overall, because like we just said, like they went down immediately in the first drive in week one, scored that touchdown, and then Kittle goes down. Like that's a huge loss instantly. In week 18 in the wild card round, like they were so depleted with weapons, they had nothing. So let's see what Purdy can do if he actually has guys he's throwing to that aren't just Kendrick Bourne and DeMarcus Robinson and those guys. So if he actually has his true weapons out there, I want to see what they can do with this offense with Kyle Shanahan actually having playmakers that aren't like, I don't care if he had Juwan Jennings. Like that doesn't count to me. Juwan Jennings, there's a reason why no team wanted to pay for him and why he's sitting now as a wide receiver three on a team. So I think last year, it is a little worrisome of how good McDonald is at stopping Purdy and making him, especially with the turnovers that he causes him to make. But let's see what he could do once he actually has weapons to throw to.
I hate the fact that the Niners don't play Seattle until October. Yeah. That's a bummer just because guys will be injured by then. You know, like give me a week two, week three matchup. Then I would feel more confident. Get Arizona out of there September 27th. Who cares about playing the Cardinals? Throw the Seahawks in there. But, obviously it's not Mike McDonald's fault that those guys were hurt. He didn't injure any of them. But, yeah, I would like to see, give me full strength and see what happens. But that is, like, the job for Kyle Shanahan is figuring out how to move the ball. Like I said, early on he had success. 429 yards in that Christmas Day game. 483 yards the next time they played, 384 yards in week one this year in the victory. So like they were able to move the ball. The turnovers for Brock has to be the number one thing against Seattle. He has had way too many. And I've gone back and watched because I'm a psychopath. Some of those interceptions he's had against the Seahawks are just bad. He drops back to pass. He throws it right over the middle of the field, right to the guy. Like he's right there. It was like he was trying to throw to the linebacker. And it was just like make you want to rip your hair out watching it.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
He does seem to make really, really stupid mistakes against this defensive system. And what's going to be really hard is that he goes back-to-back games, weeks 4 and 5, against the Broncos and the Seahawks. Like, cool. That might get to him, right? If he has a couple bad games, he has a bunch of turnovers. Like, let's hope that's not the case. But though you can't ask for a tougher back-to-back two defenses to face right there. But then afterwards, it's going to probably feel amazing because he gets Commanders, Falcons, Raiders, Cowboys defense. That's going to feel like I'm playing high school defenses compared to those two teams.
Yeah, there's going to be Brock Purdy discourse, right? Because it'll be back-to-back games where the offense struggles. Plus, they got to play the Rams defense in week one, game, prime time. There'll be calls for that, most likely. And then, like you said, then it sort of lightens up and we'll see. But
that's three out of those first five games are very difficult. If they were to start 2-3 with their only wins against the Dolphins and Cardinals, like, how would you feel then going into a much easier stretch, though, of schedule after that? For a little bit.
I mean, easy, of course, is a relative term.
Yeah.
But yeah, look at the schedule. Rams week one. Dolphin, you got to win that Dolphins game. The Cardinals game, they should win. If you can go into Denver 2-1 at worst, you're fine. But if they drop that game to the Rams and then they drop, oh man, it could get We could be white knuckling this thing early, Michelle.
Mm-hmm. But then you would have to feel confident of them going up against the Commanders and the Falcons and the Raiders and even the Cowboys and even the Vikings, right? So even if you started 2-3, even if we, you know, go get into week six, we're like, oh, this team is struggling. 2-3, I think they could win 4 straight games, 5 straight games.
As tough as some of those defenses are, I have faith in Kyle and the offense to be good enough. It's going to come down to the defense. The defense has to be better than last year. You have to get pressure. You have to get sacks. You have to get turnovers. Mm-hmm. The offense last year was not the problem. Even though, obviously, they didn't score 30 points a week, they were not the problem. It was the defense last year, giving up 4.5 yards per play on first down, getting no pressure whatsoever, creating no turnovers, getting stupid pass interference penalties when they were able to get stops on the rare occasions. That is what has to improve. Now, it should be better, but it absolutely has to be better, including against Mike McDonald and everybody.
The sacks and the pressures have to be better. And even though these guys are coming off the monster injuries, it's still, I think, better to have them on the field coming back from injuries than to have what they had on the field last year with just nothing, with everyone hurt. And that has to be better. I am so scared of the safety group. And this is what's frustrating me with training camp. We should be going in the training camp being like, okay, there's competition at left guard, right? But no, they're not getting Connor Colby any competition. They're just saying that 7th round, 2nd year player, you don't even have to compete. You just have a starting job, basically, because there's no one to compete with. And then with safety, it's like these guys have been struggling in Mustafa and Jair Brown, and you're just saying, if you're healthy, you just get a starting job. You just get, like, I wanted them to bring in competition and they did none of that. So these guys who have not shown any, whether they have not shown anything or have shown that they're bad, are just being given starting roles. And I hate that.
They have not prioritized those spots. Like, look at wide receiver. There's a lot of competition for wide receiver, in my opinion.
That's pretty much the only thing we'll be looking at is the wide receiver group for who's going to get to play.
They should have that level of competition everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Like, great. I don't want Christian Kirk to just be given the job. If Cowing looks better than Christian Kirk, Cowing should be the guy that's wide receiver 3. Like, Christian Kirk is not nothing. Let him earn it. Let the best players play. They have a bunch of guys that are at least in the mix there. Left guard is Connor Colby. It's Robert Jones, who I think is probably going to be the guy that gets the job.
Oh, okay. You know,
Brett Toth is there, although I think that he's maybe looking at it as a center. We'll see. Carver Willis is a guy that they're moving inside, but I don't think he's realistically going to win the job either. They have the floor at left guard is so much lower than the floor at wide receiver, and that is frustrating to your point.
Robert Hunt's the one guy you brought in. That's not acceptable.
Mrs. Hunt is not going to be happy to hear that.
They just ignore certain positions. It's like Kyle Shanahan focuses on wide receivers and running backs, and that's all he cares about. And the rest of the things, he's like, you know what? We're fine. And edge, I guess. They like to bring in edges. They just can't find another one besides Bosa.
They should continue to keep bringing them in. Romello Height, Dazon Stribling, and Kalen Black. Sorry, I couldn't think of the other sort of the three rookies that I'm most excited to see. Pack up your stuff.
Shocker, running back, wide receiver, edge.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, we can't say we don't know what they prioritize. This is year 10 now. We know where they're looking. It's just a matter of whether or not it's going to pay off this year. Yesterday on the YouTube channel, we did a breakdown with Johnny Dell of the Shanahan offense, and we started kind of with the run game of how it all works, how they tend to block guys. And I think the reason why they don't prioritize every spot on the offensive line is because so much of this running game is misdirection. Like, hey, we're going to make it look like we're running wide zone to the right. So the defensive line is going to be moving to the right already. And if that's the case, we want our offensive linemen to push them to the right to take them out of the play. So they think if a D lineman is already going to the right, it's easier for an offensive lineman to push them in the direction that they are already going. And so I think they think that's why we can sort of get by with maybe lesser offensive linemen than some other teams is going to be kind of because of the scheme. And Joe Thomas kind of said that when he was with the Browns and Shanahan was there. I think that's why they don't prioritize every spot in that way, because they're like, look, it's not, we're not asking our guys to do the same thing other teams are asking their offensive linemen to do.
And I think that's fine. And I do think Purdy in this offense has been able to overcome it. It's not like it's been the worst. It's not like Purdy's getting killed back there over and over and over again. But it would be really nice to just get to see him play behind a solid offensive line with guys that you trust will block for him and not let him get killed by a great edge rusher or anything like that. And it's just worrisome with how Trent Williams is clearly the best guy on the line by far and his age and his health issues. And then everyone else is kind of just a guy or has not been proven whatsoever.
I think Colton McKivitz is pretty solid.
Just a guy. Yeah, he's solid. Just a guy.
He's solid. He's borderline Pro Bowl.
No.
How dare you? You don't think Colton McKivitz is a borderline Pro Bowl player?
If all the other top tackles in the league decline, sure. Decline the invitation.
I think he has been improving, definitely solid for them. Pooney, please stay healthy, Dominic Pooney. He got hurt in the preseason last year against the Raiders on a friggin' extra point. Could there be a more meaningless play than a preseason extra point? And he battled last year. He really struggled early. He got better as the year went along, but ultimately he was not the same guy he was as a rookie. Please give me a healthy Dominic Pooney. And then, of course, center, we all know Jake Brendel is 49ers first in our hearts. I don't know.
Literally, he is like has to be the firstborn son of some huge guy in this organization because the way they love Jake Brendel.
They love him.
He's a below average center. He's right there at close to average, but I think more on the below average side than above. And they love that man to death.
Sograz says 80% of the time Kyle is right and the scheme gets them through. The problem comes in that you're likely to get one of those 20% from one of the teams you play in the playoffs. I mean, they have played well in the playoffs, but in certain situations, yeah, it does come back to bite them in the ass because you're inevitably at some point, sometime, you're going to end up in a straight passing situation and you're going to have to try and hold up against, especially in the playoffs, the better defensive pass rushing teams. And that's when they can get into a little bit of trouble. Now, look, Purdy was the best guy in the league last year at avoiding sacks. 9%, I think, was his pressure to sack rate, which was the best in the NFL. But ideally, you don't want your quarterback to have to do all those sort of gymnastics all the time, even though I think that Purdy can do it.
Yeah, I mean, Purdy has shown he's a playmaker, right? It doesn't have to go perfect for him. He can still make big plays even when the play falls apart or his offense, one of the offensive linemen kind of screws up. He can run away and throw on the run, and scramble. And that's really what we are saying. We want to see that from him running more when plays do break down. Like, you don't have to just sit back there and wait for a guy to get open. Just take off and run, get those 10 yards. I want to see Purdy continue to develop his run game and become more like a Mahomes type of runner where if a defense shows you something, you just kill them until they change it up. And then your guys are going to be more open, right? Because they have to change up their game plan. All of a sudden they're not just trying to cover the wide receivers anymore because they're worried about you running. I want that mentality in him because I do think that's an amazing part of Mahomes' game is you turn your back to me and I'm just running and there's nothing you can do until you change it up and then I'm going to kill you as a passer.
And the timing of those runs was always just backbreaking. Third and 7, 8-yard run. Third and 10, 11-yard run. He was so good at knowing when to take off and use his legs. That's definitely something that Purdy can do more of. They started to use Brock more in the zone read around the goal line, which I absolutely love. Please keep that coming. You can do it. He's good at it. And then it puts it in the head of defenses that it's something that they have to pay attention to, which is going to open stuff up for other people. Phenomenal, phenomenal job in that regard. All right. We also have some fantasy numbers that we are going to get to on the show today. For anyone that doesn't know, Michelle is a fantasy expert. She's our fantasy expert here on Fridays. Normally what we do when the 49ers are actually playing people, it is our fantasy show. We give you best bets as well. So that's normally how our Fridays go. Obviously, they're a little different this time of year, but Michelle is a fantasy expert. You do a fantasy show for Locked On as well. Why are you smiling? Are you not a fantasy expert?
It's just a funny thing to say. I work with fantasy, but yeah, it's just a funny thing to say that I'm an expert, but I'll take it.
What should I? Michelle is, dabbles in fantasy? You want me to say that? You host a fantasy football podcast.
Well, not anymore, honestly. I have my different show now. Locked On NFL Big Board. But no, I'm still heavily involved in fantasy, yes.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this.
All right, Michelle. Along with training camp, I don't know about you, but I always like to do the fantasy draft in the week after the preseason because you get through all the injuries, you get through all of that, you have the most information about who's going to play, who's healthy, who's going to, you know, who has won what position battles. So that's when I like to do my fantasy draft, in that dead week. Plus, it gives me something to look forward to as we're all just waiting for the season to start.
That's really what it is. I just like to do it because it's like, okay, there's a week there with nothing going on football wise, but then fantasy drafts are so much fun. That might be the most fun thing about playing fantasy football, right? Is actually doing the draft. So I agree with you. That's the best time to do it. I do have some leagues that I have to do it earlier than that. That could be fun too, because you can get sneaky values from people before all the hype comes up of them. Like if you do it like early August.
True. We got a fantasy question from Niner Faithful 8080. Michelle, which 49ers player are you for sure drafting in fantasy?
You got to go with my boy who's on the wall, and that's Brock Purdy, because just like he's disrespected in the NFL world, he's disrespected in the fantasy world. Cost. Like he's going not even in the top 12 quarterbacks, which most people play in 12 team leagues, right? So he might not even be drafted in every league, but I am definitely taking him in every league I have. Quarterback 6 in points per game last year with no weapons, right? Like now we feel much better about it with Mike Evans and hopefully Pearsall back, Chris Kirk, George Kittle, I think will be back very, very soon, if not week one. So I just like every year of his career, he has shown to be a good fantasy quarterback. Quarterback 10 in points per game in 2024. That was without CMC, Brandon Ayuk, Trent Williams. List goes on and on. Quarterback 8 in 2023. Second highest pass touchdown percentage in the league behind only Lamar Jackson since entering the league. And since becoming a starter in the league, only Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, Mahomes, and Joe Burrow have scored more fantasy points per game than Brock Purdy. And he puts up those huge games too, and he has a pretty safe ceiling from week to week. So Brock Purdy will be on all of my teams this year.
Strawberry React says, Brock has literally won me leagues for 3 years straight. I always pick him up because he is late. I do think he's a guy that you'll be able to get later on. I never like to take Brock just because he's the quarterback of my team. I don't like that. I feel like I jinx people. Levin last year in our league took multiple 49ers. I hated it. I blame him for everything that went wrong last year. That's just a weird fantasy superstition that I have.
My computer kind of just froze. So I do not have the superstition, though, of drafting players on teams I like. I like doing it. I'm not worried about it. I don't think it's going to go bad. And I like just rooting for this guy. So my
Yeah, that's fair, I guess. I don't know. I'm weird, but it's probably why I finished.
I would never want to bet, though, like a money line or anything on my favorite team. Like that, I think, is bad. Like, I think that's bad luck.
That is weird because I do. I mean, we make our 49ers picks every Friday, and I do make I don't make all of them. I make a lot of them, though. And so, I don't know why it doesn't apply to my picks, but apparently it applies to my fantasy. Maybe that's why I always finish like last in every friggin' league. Awesome fantasy baseball player, terrible fantasy football player. Don't understand it, but that's the situation I'm in.
Oh, so we just had to believe you that you're good at fantasy baseball because there's no proof. There's no proof that you're...
Boom. Here's your proof, baby. If you're watching on the stream, my fantasy
show the year
trophy 2024 is the most recent year we have on the trophy. I also won it last year. The trophy hasn't been updated. I also won it in 2022 and 2023 and 2020. I am awesome at fantasy baseball. I just can't do fantasy football. Dare you.
That's why I had to leave your league.
How dare you ask for proof? That was one of the few times I won an argument. I just happened to literally have a trophy right next to me. I feel pretty good. All right. What else should we know about the 49ers in fantasy football?
Listen, I'm still taking George Kittle. And if it takes a week or two for him to come back, I'm okay with that. Right. Like if you want to take Jake Tonjes in the last round just to have the backup, because we know Tonjes filled in for him nicely. Right. Mm-hmm. It's not going to put up Kittle numbers, but he can fill in for him nicely. And I get it. He's getting older. He's going to be 33 years old in October. He's coming off the Achilles tear. But until he shows me that he has slowed down, I'm not worried about it. He is always a top five fantasy tight end, typically top three. He was the tight end 3 in points per game last year in 11 games played, tight end 1 in 2024, tight end 5 in 2023, tight end 2, tight end 4, tight end 3, tight end 2, tight end 3, all the way going back to 2018. He has averaged 11.4 points per game in half PPR scoring formats in his career. That's the third most in NFL history among all tight ends to play at least 60 games in their career. And even like looking at last year, I felt like it was kind of all over the place with his health, but he still finished as a top 8 tight end scorer in 7 of the 11 weeks he played, top 6 in 6 of the weeks, top 3 in 3 of those 11 weeks. And one of those games was when he played one drive, and that was in week 1, and he was still top 8. So George Kittle's going late this year because people are worried about the Achilles tear. I would love the Purdy Kittle connection.
There was a player for the Browns that tore his ACL in December, and they already said he's full go, 100% ready to go for training camp, or tore his Achilles, I should say. I don't know if Achilles, like, it's not as big a deal, but like George Kittle isn't the only one who got hurt late last year with an Achilles injury where people are saying like, hey, he's going to be back. So maybe I'm the one that needs to recalibrate. Everything that we're hearing is that he has a real shot to play. If not week 1, when they go 19 hours on a friggin' airplane, then maybe week 2. And that would be tremendous for the 49ers. I've said it. People don't like to acknowledge it. Nobody has benefited more from Brock Purdy becoming the starting quarterback of the 49ers than George Kittle. He has elevated Kittle. Kittle did not score nearly as many touchdowns when other guys are with the 49ers. Almost 40% of George Kittle's career touchdowns have come with Brock at quarterback, and Brock didn't become the quarterback until 2022. I love that connection. They're great in the red zone. I wholeheartedly agree with you on Kittle.
Yeah, and now I want to know your thought on Christian McCaffrey, because he's going as the running back 3 off the board, top 5 in most leagues overall at the position. What are your thoughts on him this year? Because we know when he's out there healthy, he either plays the whole season or he misses most of the season, right? That's what he's done in his career. Now, I will say that each of the last 2 years in touches, the following year, he missed 13 games in each of those 2 seasons. If he plays, do we think he can still put up monster numbers? Because he was still the running back 1 in fantasy points last year by a good chunk per game as well. And just throughout his entire, his second year in the league, he has just been an absolute beast in fantasy. When he's on the field, he is an RB1. Do you think Christian McCaffrey still has one more year in him?
It's so confusing to me. Because on the one hand, I want to say, hey, look, he's still great as a receiver, and the run blocking can't possibly be as bad as it was for the 49ers last year. But then you look at the 49ers and you're like, well, they got the same left tackle, they got the same center, they got the same right guard, they got the same right tackle. Yes, left guard was a problem, but number one, we don't know if they can improve at left guard. We don't know how whoever gets that job is going to play. And number two, like even if they do improve there, if everybody else is the same, could it be better? But maybe it's copium, but they were so bad. The Niners running backs were 24th in rushing yards before contact last season, just 1.14. That was the second worst since Kyle Shanahan was hired in 2017. And think about how bad the roster was in 2017 and 2018. It's got to be better. I just can't imagine they're going to go a whole season again. Two straight years with the running game being as pathetic as it was. And it was pathetic. Yes. So maybe Christian McCaffrey will be better. It's just he can win you your league. If he's Christian McCaffrey anywhere close to his peak, he can win you the league by himself. So it's hard to say, like, I can't draft him because there's that kernel in your mind of, like, if he stays healthy, this is a championship I could have. So I don't know. It'd be scary, but I might take the plunge.
And you're even bringing up, like, last year, the run offense was not good. His efficiency was not good. And still, even with that, with him taking a step back and it feels like maybe hitting father time a little bit, he's still the running back.
Uh-oh. We lost Michelle. We'll get her back. But yeah, he was still a running back one. He gets the volume. He had at least five games with 30 touches last season. The rest of the NFL combined had six. So he's really good, and he gets all the touches. You got to love that. Before we get Michelle back, I just want to read this super chat from Chris Waddell, who says, holy crap, I made a live for once, just throwing some live, saying hey, and wanted to do a day with no news to report besides the headache that is Brandon Ayuk. Your slate of shows has been great lately. Bravo. Thank you very much, Chris Waddell. We appreciate it. Michelle, I don't know if you heard it, but one of the things that makes Christian McCaffrey so attractive is not only is he really good, he gets all the touches. He had five games last year with at least 30 touches. The rest of the NFL combined had six.
He led the league last year in team touches. He had 47% of the 49ers touches last year that led the league. I do think maybe that goes down this year, right? Like, they were depleted on offense. They didn't have receivers and all of that. And so hopefully that can go down, but you were bringing up, I don't know when I cut out, sorry, my internet's not doing well today, but you brought up like his struggles last year, the rushing struggles, the efficiency struggles. It didn't matter. He was still the running back one in fantasy by a lot. I mean, he averaged 21.5 points per game and half PPR last year. The next closest was Jonathan Taylor at 19.9. So 1.5 more points per game than any of the other running backs. And that was with him where we would consider a down year for him, right? Mm-hmm. Where he was kind of struggling and you're saying it should be better this year. And I agree, right? It's not even so much the offensive line, but having actual weapons that scare defenses, that helps the running game because they're not like, well, they can't do anything else. They're not going to be targeting DeMarcus Robinson here all that much. And so I do think that life will be a little bit easier for him. But again, typically, once he has a big workload one year, he can't make it another year in a row. So that I think health is the only thing to worry about until he actually shows me that he is slowing down too much to produce. But his pass catching is just so reliable, and that's really what it comes down to. It doesn't matter if he averages 3.5 yards per carry because he's going to get 100 targets or 100 receptions in any given season.
Yeah, you don't care about efficiency from a fantasy standpoint. All you care about is what the numbers are at the end of the day. And as Mike UA, YouTube channel member, points out, a healthy Kittle improves the run blocking as well. Case in point, the Niners averaged 116 rushing yards per game when Kittle started and 80 rush yards per game when he did not start. And they only had one game with 100-plus yards on the ground without Kittle. And it was the playoff loss to the Seahawks, where at the end of the game, they are just letting the 49ers run because the Niners were down by a billion points and they didn't care. So that, I mean, that Kittle alone, him being healthy, even if he doesn't return to full strength as a receiver because of the Achilles, if he can just block, that'll help.
Absolutely. I think Christian McCaffrey, it's so hard, right? Because you're taking him, you're looking at all the young, flashy guys going around him, right? Like right before him is Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs. And you're like, oh, like I get taking them over him. But if Christian McCaffrey is healthy and he plays the 17 weeks or even 16, he is probably going to outscore those guys. And it's just like, I'm still going to take Bijan and Jahmyr Gibbs over him because of just the risk that it comes with his age and injury. Mm-hmm. But I do, I think running back three is a fair cost. It could just destroy you pretty easily with his history of injuries.
it's a gamble worth taking. I think it is anyway, just because if you get it right, like you always talk about, do home run swings in fantasy, right? Especially later in the draft. Don't draft a guy that's just going to be okay. Go for a guy that's got the potential to hit it out of the park.
Yeah. And it's hard because after the Gibbs and Bijan, I do feel like so many of the running backs afterwards, they all kind of have their worries. And even the young guys, the Ashton Jeanty and it, like James Cook kind of feels like the safer one, but he definitely doesn't have the ceiling of Christian McCaffrey because he's not involved in the passing game. Devin Achane's going to be playing for a terrible offense now. Like there's a lot of question marks across the board at running back after the top two guys. And you know, Christian McCaffrey, if he's out there, he's going to be number one. So you might as well go with it if that's the position you're in. But I would rather be a little bit earlier in the pick so I can take a Bijan or Gibbs.
Right. You want the choice taken away from you. You just don't want to have to make that decision. Yeah. Vinny V, 81, says, how do you defend Evans running a route, Pearsall running a route, Kirk taking the top off, Kittle blocking with a safety valve, and Christian McCaffrey doing what he does? How do you defend that? That's what the 49ers are thinking too, I think. But I mean, how many times are we going to have all those guys out on the field at the same time? In a lot of ways, that's what the season might come down to.
And it's so infuriating to be like, yeah, this is so exciting. But the first thing that both of you and I thought were, well, we're just never going to be able to have all that. Like, because we don't get it. Like, how long has it been now where it's just year after year after year of all these injuries where it's just like, we are so like knocked down and beat down where we're like, well, that's not going to happen because they're never going to be on the field at the same time, which they should be though. So maybe hopefully we're just scarred and they will be on the field.
Yeah, the scars run deep for sure. All right. So obviously Brock, Kittle, yes. McCaffrey's certainly going to be in the mix. Where's Mike Evans winding up? Where are people putting him?
So I think you have to decide whether to go with Mike Evans or with Ricky Pearsall. And it is Evans going earlier in drafts than Pearsall. Pearsall's going pretty late. Mike Evans is going as the wide receiver 27 off the board. Pearsall, wide receiver 44. Pretty big difference between fifth round pick for Evans and ninth round pick for Pearsall. And I'm going the Pearsall way because I think going into this season, we're equally worried about injuries for both of these guys, right? Like Evans being older, struggling last year with injuries. Pearsall, obviously, we know has struggled to stay on the field. But with Evans, he's going to be 33 years old in August. Wide receivers at age 33 or older over the last decade, only four of those guys have scored more than 11 fantasy points per game in half PPR. And if he doesn't score at least 11, you're not going to be happy with him at all. Probably at least 12 with where you have to draft him. And those guys were Antonio Brown in 2021. He only played 7 games. So even though he scored 14.3 points per game, he only played 7 games. He had Devonta Adams this last year, 14 touchdowns. And I think that's the way you need to look at Mike Evans. You're drafting him in hopes that he can get those 12 to 14 touchdowns, and that will be what makes him come through for you in fantasy. Other than that, it was Larry Fitzgerald in 2017 with 161 targets. Julian Edelman, and he only averaged 12.9 points per game. It wasn't crazy. Julian Edelman in 2019 with 153 targets, 12.9 points per game. And then Larry Fitzgerald again in 2016. 11.9 points per game with 150 targets. I think both of you and I agree, he's not getting close to 150 targets this year.
I mean, if he does, things are probably going pretty well, but yeah, I can't anticipate.
He's never been that type of guy. Like 114, like what Devonta Adams got this last year with the Rams, that's what I would expect. And he'll come through with the touchdowns. Like if he gets touchdowns, he'll come through for fantasy. If not, he won't. So I'm much happier to just wait it out and go with Ricky Pearsall to lean on him because we just have not got to see enough of him, right? We've only have 8 career games that he's been healthy enough to be targeted heavily. In those 8 career games with at least 6 targets, Pearsall has averaged 93 receiving yards per game, 14.4 fantasy points per game, which you're happy with considering like he never scores touchdowns, right? So he's doing that and he doesn't ever score touchdowns. 14.4 points per game is very good. Imagine if he can actually start to score touchdowns. The only 3 wide receivers who's averaged more receiving yards per game than Pearsall in games with at least six targets since he entered the league are Puka Nacua, Ja'Marr Chase, and Jaxon Smith-Njigba. I do think he can be the real deal. He just needs to stay healthy on the field, which we're saying about all these guys. So getting to wait till the ninth round, I'm going to go with Pearsall, who I think could be a true wide receiver one, can put up big numbers. And it's a lot safer than going with Evans, who you just need a trust that can get touchdowns. Like, touchdowns can be so finicky.
Right. It's great if they get him, but rare is the guy that scores touchdowns every single week. And if that's really where the bulk of your point production is going to be, it's a scary proposition. Pearsall, the touchdown thing, I can think of two, not that it would have made that much difference, but two plays are frozen in my mind. The first one is against the Seahawks, where he's running a little out and Brock sees it and he throws it and it's like a hair off and the Seahawks defender just gets a fingertip on it and tips it away. And then in the Panthers game, that Monday night game, Pearsall is wide open running over the middle of the field for a touchdown. Brock throws it behind him. It gets intercepted, but he has not been much of a touchdown scorer. You're right, but he still is able to put up the good numbers. Please, Ricky, everybody knows where I stand on Pearsall. If there's one guy I pick to stay healthy all year, it's him, just because I love him and I'm rooting for him. How about this question from Mike UA, YouTube channel member? How do they replace John Jennings' touchdown pass production?
Who did Stribling play any quarterback in his career?
I don't think so. I was actually thinking about that, like who they might have throw. And some people are saying Christian McCaffrey. Yeah, but I think they want Christian McCaffrey catching those. Like, because that touchdown that he catches against the Eagles in the playoffs, it was windy as hell. The ball moves in the air, like, because Jennings put some air under it, and the ball moves, and McCaffrey has to track it over from one shoulder over to the other, and he makes a hell of a catch. I don't know that they want Christian throwing those. I think they want him catching it. I have no idea who they would ask to throw it.
Maybe Kyle Juszczyk?
That'd be interesting.
They should all know how to throw a ball.
And usually, like, if you're throwing that pass, it's not a tight window throw. Yeah. It's much more of, like, just throw it to an open spot and let the guy run under it and catch it.
Like, I could throw it, like, normal people can throw a ball. I'm sure they know how to throw a ball. And, like, yeah, like you said, it's one of those plays where if they're not wide open, you're supposed to just tuck it and either take the loss or throw it out of bounds. Like, you're not supposed to be throwing it. They're not asking for some crazy throw there. They can figure out someone else to do that.
More 49ers Gold Standard podcast after this. Now, without further commercial interruption, the conclusion of this episode of the 49ers Gold Standard podcast.
And we do have a comment here from Sograz, who says Stribling was a quarterback until seventh grade. Well, if you've got a former middle school quarterback on your team, you gotta take a chance. But like, hey, you know what? That's probably all the experience you need. Again, the passes that they're throwing are supposed to be wide open passes. I do like the idea of stealing Tonjes late in the draft as, you know, a potential guy. Tonjes had 5 touchdowns last year and he didn't play that much. Purdy likes to go to the tight end in the red zone.
That's why we love George Kittle. And that's all you have to do. If you take George Kittle, just get Tonjes, just in case that Kittle does miss more time than we think he has to and gets put on the PUP list or something like that, misses the first 4 weeks. Like, Tonjes will hold it down for you. For a bet, he's not going to be like he's not going to put up Kittle numbers, but he'll hold it down. So because I feel so confident in Tonjes as a backup, that's why I'm willing to take George Kittle. And he's going, like, normally Kittle's a top 3-4th round pick. Now you can get him way later, 8th-9th round, because people are so worried about this injury.
Let me ask you this question. I don't want to put this juju out there, but we're trying to, you know, hope for the best, prepare for the worst. Let's say Christian McCaffrey goes down. Let's call it a 1-week injury, right? Whatever the case may be. Are you, and you're running to the waiver wire, are you picking up Kalen Black? Are you picking up Jordan James? Or are you just saying, forget it?
It better be Kalen Black. Like, you better show us enough this training camp in the preseason. Stop wasting third round picks if it's not going to be Kalen Black. So that would be the guy I'd be going for as of right now, thinking about it, but it better be him. Now, again, like, Christian McCaffrey scores so many fantasy points because of his receiving ability, and we don't know if any of these backups will be able to be utilized in that way.
We have seen guys like Jordan Mason. We've seen guys like Oh, geez. Now I can't think of. Oh, Jeff Wilson, come in those kind of situations and have good rushing total games. Nobody's been the receiver that McCaffrey has been. And the weird thing, too, like we think of Kyle Shanahan, he just drives one running back into the ground, but it wasn't always that way. He didn't do that in 2017, 2018, or 2019. When they got to the Super Bowl in 2019, Raheem Mostert and Tevin Coleman had exactly the same number of carries, 137. It was a 50-50 split. Like, he's capable of doing that.
I thought Tevin Coleman was going to be so good with the 49ers. I remember that now. I was so high on him in fantasy. It was insane. He did not pan out. Who? There was another guy. It wasn't just Tevin Coleman.
Raheem Mostert? Are you thinking of Jeff McKinnon?
McKinnon. Yes, Jerick McKinnon. Oh, I thought he was going to be great too.
Well, he was supposed to be. He was another guy they paid a lot of money to. And remember, he tore his ACL on the last play of the last training camp practice. Like, he was supposed to be very much like McCaffrey, like a run pass threat. They were going to do all these things with him, and he tore his ACL, and that's it. He ended up playing 16 games in 2020, but he was never the same after that. And it was frustrating. That's like so much of the Niners situation in a nutshell.
Yeah, this was before my 49er fandom time. But so I remember being very, very high and Tevin Coleman and McKinnon for fantasy, and both of those guys let me down big time.
Larry Martin says Ken's Ranch is goated.
It really is. I mean,
there's some support for you. Honestly, I didn't even know who else made ranch besides Hidden Valley.
Go to the grocery store in the aisle of all the condiments. There's like 1,000 brands that make ranch.
I don't consume that much ranch, unlike you. Like I said,
well, there's a reason why TSA has had to confiscate all these bottles of ranch. It's because it's beloved by everybody except for you, apparently.
I don't know why Europe hasn't. How could that be that Europe has not had ranch dressing?
I've decided I don't want to go to Europe anymore. You're telling me if I go visit there, I don't get ranch? Like, I'm going to have to bring my own bottle of ranch? Oh my gosh, I should just bring a bunch of bottles and start selling them there.
You want to be a ranch dealer?
Yeah.
Michelle's in some shady alley in Italy. Got the stuff. You got the money? With a trench coat just filled with bottles of ranch on the inside.
People just need to start making it there, right? Like, have a little small business of ranch. People will be come flocking to you.
I don't understand. Oh,
it's not a hard thing to make.
Vinny V says, I'm having ranch on pizza right now. That is terrible, Vinny. Steven Duckett says ranch dressing is absolutely disgusting. Mike says they started selling ranch at airports beyond the security checkpoint because it's been in so much demand. I get gum before I get on a plane. Apparently, like, oh, hang on, I got to go get some ranch dressing.
No, people keep putting it in their carry-on like idiots, so it's getting taken away instead of putting it in their checked baggage.
I bet you they're charging like $15 a bottle for that ranch dressing at the airport, too.
No, I think they're not buying it at the airport, though. They're trying to, bring it through security.
But what Mike is saying is now airports are selling it, after you get through security.
Gotcha.
Duff Beer, thank you for the super chat, says, Rob bringing up Hidden Valley is like saying Pizza Hut is the best pizza. Maybe he's never had good ranch instead of us never having good pizza. Mm-hmm. I fully acknowledge it's a distinct possibility that I might not have had good ranch. See,
yeah, because Hidden Valley is gross, honestly. It's like, I don't even know if I would eat it as a last resort if I didn't have ranch. Like, that's how bad I think it is. So I just think you haven't had the right ranches.
It's possible. Now, if we make a bet this year, maybe I'll have to have you drink Hidden Valley Ranch on the show.
It would be way better than the mayo.
The mayo is so bad that we both refuse to do it again. That's how you know something is bad.
Yeah.
No. All right. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. Thank you, everybody. Please like this video. Subscribe to the channel. Thank you to all our YouTube channel members, our Golden Ticket members. We appreciate you so much. Can't even put you on the scroll anymore. You get your own screen at the end of the show. I cannot tell you what your support means to me. I promise you, I will never, ever, ever take it for granted. Just a quick heads up, there's going to be no show more than likely on Monday because I'm going to be on vacation in Rhode Island. Vish and I are going to try to tape something tomorrow. Don't know if it's going to happen. So if there is no show, that will be why. But that is the last vacation I am taking. And once we get done with that, it'll be full go for training camp. cannot wait. Michelle, enjoy the rest of your weekend. If you want more Michelle, check out the Big Board podcast on Locked On.
NFL Big Board. Please go subscribe. I'm all solo there. I'm trying to build up this show. I would appreciate it so much.
The kids grow up so fast. You're doing a great job on that. The latest episode, I believe, is the hottest coaching seats. So again, check that out. If Kyle Shanahan is on that, by the way, I haven't had a chance to listen, but if Kyle Shanahan is on that, I'm leaving a negative review. How about that?
I know that's the issue. I'm giving so many hot takes throughout my first couple of weeks of doing it that I'm like, oh man, there's going to be fan bases so mad at me that they don't want to be nice. But Kyle Shanahan, I'm not going to say if he's on it or not. You're going to have to go listen.
Hey, if you're not getting hot takes from people that are mad at you, you're not doing the job right. That's what I always say. Good and bad. I've been called a 49er homer. I've been called the most negative 49er fan of all time, which to me says I'm doing the job exactly the way it's supposed to be done. Thank you, Michelle. Thank you, everybody. We'll talk next week.
Bye, y'all.